This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today and tomorrow, we're asking the question, when and how should we get out of Iraq? Our next guest, General Sir Michael Rose, is a retired British Army general. In a 2006 commentary in the British newspaper The Guardian, he called for the impeachment of then-Prime Minister Tony Blair for leading England to war under false pretenses. Rose commanded the UN Protection Force in Bosnia in 1994 and then became Adjutant General of the British Army. He's written a book about the Revolutionary War and lessons that can be applied to the war in Iraq. It's called Washington's War and will be published in the U.S. in April. General Sir Michael Rose, welcome to Fresh Air. Let me start by asking you, where did you stand on the invasion of Iraq?
Well, from the outset, of course, I'd been following the events developing in the Middle East quite closely, and I'd also been reading a lot of the intelligence material that was being published in the United Kingdom, in particular the famous Blair dossier, which was published in September of 2002. I was persuaded from the outset that any invasion of Iraq would be based on false premise and would result in a catastrophe both for the people of Iraq and for the Western powers, who of course his first priority is fighting global terror. And by invading Iraq, of course, we were going to make it almost impossible for the West to be able to mobilize the very people we need to help us fight Al-Qaeda, and that are the Muslim people of the world.
Now, in June, you said, there's no way we're going to win the war, and we should withdraw and accept defeat because we're going to lose on a more important level if we don't. Would you explain what you meant there?
What I meant was that by continuing with this costly, unnecessary, and probably unwinnable war, we would be alienating the very people of the world, the Muslim people of the world. We would be continuing to alienate them and make them hostile parties at a time when we needed their help to fight the very real threat from Al-Qaeda. And our position in the Muslim world, the Western countries' position in the Muslim world, has been greatly damaged by the invasion of Iraq. Now, the arguments that are arrayed against that are that, of course, by pulling out of Iraq, we would be allowing the insurgents and the terrorists to win. And I just do not believe that to be the case, because, of course, what you would be doing, it would be handing over the responsibility for security to the Iraqi forces and the Iraqi government completely, and they would therefore be in the forefront of the war against terrorism alongside the Western countries. And, of course, they know far better how to fight the war than we do.
Now, this week, Iraq's defense minister said that Iraq wouldn't be able to take full responsibility for its internal security until the year 2012, and wouldn't be able to defend its borders from outside threats until 2018. So how does the United States take that into account?
I don't think we've been doing it very effectively even whilst we've been there. And I certainly don't think what he says is necessarily true. He has a strong vested interest in retaining the money and the support that he's currently getting from the American presence. I don't think that we should disconnect from supporting the Iraqi armed forces. And indeed, I think that the continuing program of arming and equipping and training them would probably go on. But I do not believe that we should remain on the ground in Iraq as an army of occupation.
So when do you think we should get out? Should there be a timetable? Should we be setting a date? And if so, what should that date be?
I think we should certainly give some kind of time frame for withdrawal. That would place the responsibility for their own security on the Iraqis in a way that possibly they're trying to put off at the moment, because they have a vested interest in the continuing presence, certainly the present administration there, of the American forces. The fact that there's been such a rapid improvement in the security situation has not necessarily come about because of the additional 20,000 troops, the so-called surge that took place last year. It's mainly come about because the David Petraeus, General David Petraeus, of whom I have an enormous respect and who of course understands far more about insurgency wars than I do, I think he's accepted that America needs to bring on side the Sunni insurgents. Of course, the Sunni tribes are not endemically anti-West or anti-American. Indeed, for many years they were our strongest allies in the West, but by disempowering them we alienated them and forced them into an insurgency. And by bringing them on side now, albeit we'll be abandoning our democratic dream, I think we are making Iraq ultimately a more safe and secure place.
You're referring to the fact that General Petraeus' strategy is in part to pay Sunni militia leaders and Sunni sheikhs and tried to get them to stop the insurgency and team up with us in fighting al-Qaeda.
I think General Petraeus's strategy of bringing the Sunni on side is an essential one, and one that should have been taken a long time ago.
So, but when we pull out and we stop paying the Sunni militia leaders, might they take up arms again in something like a civil war?
I think a civil war is likely. I think there is going to be some great convulsion in that country at the very least, because the Sunni will certainly use their training and their equipment and their arming to try and regain power in that country. And of course, the Shia will try and stop that happening.
So is there anything that the United States should be doing before it withdraws, or as it withdraws, or after it withdraws, to try to prevent that from happening?
Well, a cynic would say that that is the very thing that America's a policy that America wishes to happen. America, I think, would be more comfortable with a Sunni, albeit a non-democratic government in Iraq, than having a Shia government there, which, of course, always one suspects may have the hand of Iran controlling it.
Now, the Brits withdrew from Basra last summer, and you wrote, the British government, having declared that the Iraqis were now capable of good governance and could look after their own security, withdrew their troops from Basra and concentrated their remaining forces into a single base at the airport. This was done regardless of the true qualities on the ground. Are you saying that the British declared success even though they hadn't really achieved it, and then they pulled out?
Well, of course, that's exactly what we did. We'd been making very little impact right from the start on, I mean, other than having got rid of Saddam Hussein's Ba'athists in the south, we made very little impact on the three main pillars of good governance, security, or reconstruction. We were too few in number, and our resources in financial terms were far too small. And so we were merely there, in a way, as a form of camouflage for the American presence to the north. We were never able to control the behavior of the police in Basra, or indeed how the administration was functioning. And of course, corruption is one of the greatest threats to the stability of Iraq, and that's certainly true in the south. And I don't think we ever went and were able to solve that. So we did what was necessary, declared victory, and we have virtually gone.
So what have the consequences been in Basra? What did the British leave behind?
We left behind a more stable form of rule in which the Iraqis are running their own affairs in their own way. I mean, the policemen who we for 5 years have taken to our training colleges in the United Kingdom merely returned back to Iraq, and in many cases continued with their traditional ways of getting convictions, which of course was arrest, torture, confession, conviction. Nothing has changed. Also, the women's rights are not being properly respected, and the two competing militias are still fighting for power in the south. There was nothing we could have done about it, given the lack of numbers that we deployed.
What are the lessons, if any, there for the United States?
Well, I think the lessons for the United States come not from necessarily from the war in Iraq today, but from the American War of Independence, when Britain, the global superpower, which suffered the similar arrogance and hubris of a superpower that America administration had when it invaded Iraq, accepted finally defeat. The administration was thrown out at the time, the administration of Lord North and Germain and George III, and far-sighted people who had the moral courage to accept defeat and see through the consequences of defeat were able to recover Britain's position in the end of the 18th century and allow us to prepare for a much greater threat, which of course was from France. And within 25 years of withdrawing from North America and giving the Americans responsibility for their own future, we were taking on the greatest military genius the world had ever seen, Napoleon, and we would not have been able to do that had we not halted that unnecessary and, as I say, costly and unwinnable war in 1785. And at that point, we immediately started to lay down the keels of new ships and rebuild our armies so we could take on a greater threat. And indeed, we went on to build our great empire. And neither America nor Great Britain would have become the two forces for good in the world that we became in the 19th century, and indeed in the 20th century, had we not had the moral courage to accept defeat in 1785.
Is the analogy there that you think the United States should be preparing to fight a bigger enemy, i.e. al-Qaeda?
That is absolutely so. And our continuing presence in Iraq is making it very difficult for us to win friends amongst the Muslim people of the world, the very people we need to mobilise on our side if we're ever going to make proper progress against Al-Qaeda transnationally. Now, of course, within Iraq, and particularly in the Sunni Triangle, Al-Qaeda have been virtually eliminated. Why have they been eliminated? Because the very people who brought them into Iraq and employed them, the Sunni, and of course they only did that to help them fight the army of occupation, have now changed sides with and joined forces with the Americans, and of course are leading them to their old former allies, and we're able to destroy them.
But what kind of security and order and human rights do we owe Iraq before pulling out after the chaos that we created?
Well, of course, we can't just walk away and leave the Iraqis completely to their own affairs. They will not only, because we invaded their country and allowed situations of chaos, disorder and killing to happen in that country. I mean, we must remember that some 2 million people, mainly middle-class professionals, have fled from that country, and there have been another 2 million people displaced within that country, leaving aside all the damage and the killings that have happened within that country. And of course, they will need enormous help to try and rebuild themselves in the future. But one shouldn't underestimate the ingenuity and the technical ability and the sophistication of the Iraqi people. The presence of the foreign occupier has torn them apart in a way that they've not been torn apart before, and I think that our departure will make it easy for them to work together shoulder to shoulder, albeit with a bit of help from outside, to rebuild and reconstruct their country, not as a model of Western liberal style democracy, but as a country that is stable, functioning, moderate, and an ally of the West.
You're a general who has opposed the war in Iraq, knowing that, you know, your men were there fighting it, and people from your regiment are now in Afghanistan. So what is it like for you to believe that the fighting isn't going to achieve the political goals and yet really have your heart with the men who are fighting?
Well, of course, everything I say has come about as a result of either visits on the ground in Iraq or else talking to young soldiers and their officers about the realities. And, of course, they cannot speak out. And I believe it is a moral responsibility for retired military who can understand the difficulties that they're up against, although the politicians apparently can't, to speak up for them in the political field. And that's exactly what I've been doing for the past 7 or 8 years. I applaud the professionalism and the heroism and the determination of the young men and women, both in America and from my own country, fighting in the front line. But unless there are the right political platform and there is a sense of realism about the resources and the strategies that are being employed, then, of course, they're unnecessarily wasting life, and that one cannot live with.
Well, General Sir Michael Rose, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
General Sir Michael Rose's book, Washington's War, will be published in the U.S. in April.